Kirk is the CEO and managing partner of Incenta Communications. They're an organization focused on the growth and success of healthcare, technology, and community-oriented organizations. He's also a passionate, active cancer advocate, having recently announced a partnership with CancerX, committing over $100,000 to accelerating digital health innovation. Welcome to the show, Leslie.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Excited to have you on. Tell us a little about your personal life, some more about your work, and why you do what you do.
Sure. I'll start way back in the way. So I was not raised with a lot of money or around a lot of money, which I think is an important distinction. My dad was a blue collar worker and my mom was a stay at home mom. And, pursuing your passion, for anyone that's familiar with that upbringing, is not really a conversation. That's not really something anyone talks about. That's, it's not let's pay your bills, let's do whatever's going to happen to make sure your family's taken care of. I went into a field that had a 40% growth rate. I'm not going to lie. That's what I did it. That's the only reason I did it. And I was, the first person in my family to graduate college, which I was only able to do through scholarships and, working part-time. And, when I accidentally fell into healthcare technology, just by applying to a job a few years after the recession, I was blown away because all of a sudden I was surrounded by these founders and CEOs that had most of the time deeply personal experiences with how healthcare had failed them. Either they were doctors where it failed them in their workplace, or they were just people who went through our healthcare system and went through sometimes some really tragic stories. And if gaps had been filled, or if something had gone a little bit better, somebody might have lived, or something would have, they might not have been in financial straits or whatever might have happened to them. And so these people who built businesses based on a deeply passionate experiences was something completely new to me. And it kind of defined my place amidst like a really big problem, which is our broken healthcare system. And fast forward, we are something very different because consulting firms are not known for being very value driven. Most of the time they'll work with anyone who will give them money. And we are extremely focused, mission-based consulting firms. So we work with organizations who aren't afraid to address the really big problems, the ones that don't always have financial incentives on the other end, health equity, rural health, substance abuse, maternal health, all these really big challenges that we have in our healthcare world. And we do everything we can do to help make sure they succeed, because a joke we have in our industry is a lot of CEOs in our world are either doctors or engineers. And something that they both have in common is only a handful of them really understand the business side of it, because they built something to solve a problem and they don't necessarily know how to do the other component. And we have a really complex environment in which to build a company. So we help them build it. We help them grow. We help them help more people. And so it's really important to us because we believe that their success will actually help make our healthcare system better. So fast forward, from my anecdote of not being able to pursue my passion, because we've built a company that's seeing some success, I finally feel like we have the ability to expand how we're helping our healthcare system improve, and hence the CancerX Impact Partnership. We realized that is something that for me is deeply personal, because my mom battled cancer a handful of years ago, and something that we could actually do, combining our skill sets as a company, but also personally and across our group. So
I love it. We never know when we set out where we're going to end up, but it certainly sounds like you've managed to find an opportunity where you can have a very big business effect, but also while doing really important work.
Yeah. I mean, listen, tripping and falling into a mission is not usually how people do it, but that seems to be what happened. So
Yeah, I appreciate that. You mentioned a couple of different, for lack of a better term, verticals: maternal health, rural health. And when you take a big step back and look at healthcare, I bet there's just dozens, if not more, different sort of segments and different ways that people are helping other people, because we human beings have so many different needs from a healthcare perspective.
Yeah. There's just, maternal health is just one of the rising ones. And health equity is another really big problem right now. And we work a lot with public health initiatives and Medicaid. When you look at where funding goes, because I mentioned the money piece earlier, that's one of the trickiest parts of our industry. They tend to focus on very specific initiatives at any given time. So maternal health, that lends itself sometimes to where we happen to be working, just because that's where a lot of the energy and initiatives go. And a lot of times we work with businesses who built a really powerful solution, but they don't necessarily know exactly how to prioritize it. To your point, there's so many people that need help and there's so many problems. So how do you narrow your focus and not try to be everything to everyone in order to make incremental improvements?
That's always a tricky thing. I don't want to, I want to avoid boiling the ocean, but I also don't want to be too limited. Yeah. And the folks that you're working with, I'm sure these brilliant people who are probably capable of solving many, many different problems, but helping them realize, okay, we can't do all of it. Let's just start one thing at a time. So absolutely. Prioritization.
Yeah. Yeah. And some of that, again, we work with a lot of people that don't necessarily have immediate financial incentives, where we just have, investors are like, dying to invest in them, and especially in the public health side. So what we have to do is figure out, I hate to say the words chase the money, but figure out how, again, these guys are trying to solve real things, and I live, unfortunately, in an industry that's notoriously 10 plus years behind, where, buzzwords are everywhere. And that's true about every industry. But the difference with us is that it's not going to get any better if we don't start, really innovating in the areas that don't always have all the money. And so how do you solve that? How do you solve that problem? And so working with these companies to grow by prioritizing in the right areas of our massive problem healthcare system will help them grow so that they can help more and more people. So, segmentation sometimes is by state. We have such a complex regulatory environment that a lot of times that helps you narrow in on where you need to prioritize. And also how you talk about yourself and how you build. This is a big part of our business, is the reputation part, because the commodity that's hardest to come by in our world is trust. And to build yourself to be a trusted business in our environment can take a very long time. And so, and as soon as you do something wrong or take a wrong turn, which again is really hard, easy to do in healthcare, you can completely eliminate all of that equity that you built up. So, we have a lot of things that we help help them do in order to actually, again, do real things. Because we have a lot of people who are just repackaging something that's already been done 100 times and calling it new. A big joke that we have is that AI isn't real, right? It is, but we had big data, that we have machine learning, and it's just the next buzzword. And then the moment that generative AI and ChatGPT came out, all of a sudden, overnight, all of these companies have AI solutions. And that's just not reality. And it's also not helping the point, which is the patient at the end of the day. It's not helping solve for financial toxicity. It's not trying to solve anything in particular. And I think that's where I get a little fussy, because it makes us so frustrated on our side when businesses aren't doing real things. So.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. So trust, and who are the different, for lack of a better term, stakeholders? We need consumers, the patients to trust you. Who else? Where else is trust?
It's everywhere. It's every layer. So think about, medical mistrust is a massive problem. And so I'm a patient and I don't trust that I'm not going to get a bill for $20,000 in a month. I don't trust that you know, the allergies that I have to certain medications is actually getting to the doctor. Mm. I don't trust if I go that I'm going to get the right analysis, especially if I am in rural, you know. So that's just one piece. Then you have to have the medical teams, right? So especially when you're talking about comorbidities or these really big, elaborate, or cancer specifically, right? These really long, big medical plans, you're dealing with lots and lots of doctors and nurses and, you know, admins and all these, and, you know, the health plans, all of these guys also have to trust each other or work together. And then on top of that, trust in, you know, obviously I work in healthcare technology, which is the underlining of our whole system. And if you can't trust that data that you have received is accurate, then you don't know that you can do a good job. So it's just every single layer of our healthcare system is so reliant on trust. And I think we're having a little bit of a crisis right now where no one really trusts anyone. And so, you know, I think that we're band-aiding it. There's a lot of ways to triple check and all of that. But I think something that we obviously focus on is making sure that our businesses that we work with, again, are prioritizing correctly and making sure that it's quality over quantity and that they understand that it takes a long time, but that trust is so important to their success, to the success of their end users, whether it's the doctors or the payers or the patients. So,
yeah, you've got your work cut out for you.
Yeah, no big problem. That's you know, at least I was taught how to do a work ethic and not, you know, since I didn't have to worry about pursuing big passions, I was just like, I don't know, it seems like a problem we can fix. No problem. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me roll my sleeves up and fix this giant problem. As you were going through all of those examples, I'm like, oh yeah, that makes all the sense in the world. And, and I don't know that I distrust certain aspects of the healthcare system, but I am less trusting than I was probably 10 years ago. And all the examples that you laid out certainly make a lot of sense. Do you have hope for the future?
Oh, of course. Of course. And I think that every little bit helps too. I think that people see, I mean, you know, people look at our political system, and people look at our healthcare system the same way, which is they see this massive problem and think, how can I do anything, you know, to actually affect it? And I think that with healthcare, you know, people don't just throw their hands up and walk away. I think that with healthcare, because it touches all of us and it touches our families, you know, people can't just ignore it. And so I think every little bit helps. And I think that acknowledging the change, you know, with the mistrust piece, kind of like you were talking about, I think that as an industry, everyone's doing a lot better of educating and letting patients take a little bit more control and ownership. We're one of the only industries in the world where, you know, like it impacts literally our life and we have so little say in it. And so it's such an interesting thing. And that's something that's shifted over the last 10, 15 years, where people are becoming a lot more bigger advocates in their own health. And I think that's really important. And again, all the businesses that can help that be even stronger and those voices be heard more, especially when it comes to health equity. I think that's a really important piece.
Yeah, that certainly does make a lot of sense, that as you do look at the massive layers, just different ways that we receive care today and into the future, I need to be an advocate for myself and I need to take ownership of my health and then be able to trust that the companies that I'm interfacing with or interacting with, I can make my case. I can say, hey, this is what I think is happening, and then trust that they're going to be able to give me the care, deliver it correctly, or help me navigate a system that I don't understand.
100%. So I took my mom, who's mostly blind, to a doctor's appointment the other day, and she was having some issues with her glaucoma, which is only one of, you know, 50 issues she has with her eyesight. You know, the doctor she's been going to, I hope they don't listen to this podcast, you know, is in rural North Georgia. And, you know, and you know, she didn't want to come down here. She didn't want, she can't drive. So I had to go get her. And she was telling me that, like, you know, she didn't want to do this because she didn't want to inconvenience me and she didn't want to meet a new doctor. It makes her really nervous. But we get there and it's in downtown Atlanta, and these people were just sharp. They listened. And there was this thing that had been bugging her for so long, which is that, which is probably not worth going into in depth, but her eyesight, you know, the pressure in her eye, which is why she was going to this glaucoma and cataract specialist and retina specialist. She wanted to, it was net net. She just wanted them to say that she could also put this eye drop in her fully blind eye. And they kind of ignore that eye at her old doctor's office because, you know, why care about a dead eye? But it was actually making this doctor listen to her and said, no, actually, this is a valid thing and you should absolutely do it and completely rearrange the regimen of her eye drops. And so, but what was so interesting was that after that doctor's appointment, it wasn't about, oh, I'm so glad that my eyes are going to be better. It was, I can't believe that doctor listened to me. Like that was, she was blown away by the knowledge, by the, like, you know, even down to the technicians, like they knew all the verbiage. She didn't have to remember 30 years of eye stuff. You know, it was a very eye-opening experience for her, with something that she does 10 times a year, you know? But exposure to that, like she didn't even know that that was a thing until she went to this doctor's office. So things like that are just like these little microcosms. It's amazing how much just listening, and having technology, like how many times have you filled out a form and then you literally walk in and then you repeat everything that you were on that form. And then you walk into the actual doctor's or whatever, the doctor comes in and he makes you repeat every single thing on that report form, you know, and then you get referred to another doctor and none of your information gets passed along to the next doctor in the referral. I mean, these are the types of things that are so simple. They should be so simple, and are so impactful so that people can focus on just talking and listening and, you know, the emotional pieces of our healthcare system if the technology was cleaner and simpler and more accurate. So
you would theoretically think that good, clean, successfully working, effectively working technology would alleviate a lot of the burdens that we're experiencing.
Yeah, you'd think so. But that's something too, you know, I deal with a lot of companies when I say we want to work with companies that are doing real stuff. In some ways, we're looking for those companies that are trying to eliminate stuff. You know, I think that that's such a big piece because a lot of people are like, oh, well, if we add in this technology, then maybe we can simplify it. But what you end up with is 40 layers of Band-Aids, right? So instead, let's make it cleaner by eliminating all of the extra steps that we don't need, because it's like a game of telephone. That's how data becomes incorrect is, you know, we work with a company that deals with patient identity and, you know, think about that. Like when you walk in and they don't even know who you are. Because there might be four of you in the system because you accidentally got your name put in multiple different times, spelled four different ways. And so which notes are they pulling up when you're in that doctor's office? You know, that kind of stuff. It's just so, it just does not need to be, it is what it is, but it feels like a problem we should be able to solve for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Whew. It is a... a massive, slow moving, fast moving problem. I don't.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, Cancer X stuff. That's something that's so interesting because this is a group. The reason we chose them wasn't just our personal attachments to solving something as big as cancer, but it was the only way we're going to solve this is by having big brains come together and work together. And there's, again, because of the financial incentive issue, there's not a lot of worlds in our world in which a lot of these brains come together. And, you know, that's just one example of, you know, a bunch, I mean, 160, I think, different members of different orientations, academic, you know, commercial, all of the payers, providers, all of these people, nonprofits coming together and trying to solve something. And I think that's why it's so critical. Because it's not just having the big brains coming together, but almost the neutrality, which I realize is a funny thing coming from someone who does business consulting, but you know, the neutrality of no one has a financial stake in the game, if that makes sense. Like no one's selling a business at the end of this. So let's just solve the actual problem that's at hand. So, that's, I think that's something that I think about a lot, you know, at 4 o'clock in the morning when I can't sleep.
Yeah, I totally get it. And that makes a lot of sense that it's not necessarily, it's really hard to bring together really, really smart people that have their own stuff that they're working on and their own huge
Right.
problems that they're trying to solve and all of it. And to be able to do that in an environment where there's not a profit motive to actually solve the problems makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
Well, Leslie, thank you so much for coming on. Where can people learn more about you and Incenna?
You know, we have a website, Incenna, which is guys spelled I-N-N-S-E-N-A, totally made up word, no problem. But we're all active, love it or hate it, on LinkedIn. So feel free. Again, we are people who are constantly trying to network and grow people's networks and build relationships to actually make real things happen. So if you guys would love to interact with us, go find us on there.
Perfect. Well, if you enjoyed this much as I did, show Leslie your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to Incenna.com, Incenna.com, and find them on LinkedIn as well. I will link all of those in the notes of the show. Thanks again, Leslie.
Thank you so much.
Till next time, remember, do your part by doing your best.